Welcome to episode 40 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. We're back after a three-week hiatus, and back with me, as always, is Jeff Smith in Washington. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
Got a lot to get to. Obviously, we missed a couple weeks. We were at the Newport Cup and then catching up last week. So, Davis Love III finally got the monkey off his back, and that would be the winless for way too long monkey. He managed to do it at a course he redesigned in Greensboro, the Chrysler Classic of Greensboro.
Oh, yeah.
A good win for Davis Love. He had faltered earlier in the year. Obviously, he shot a record first round in the Players' Championship back in March. And then missed the cut. Quite the opposite here. Kind of hung on and, really kind of closed it out pretty well. I mean, he birdied three or four of his last five or six holes to salt away a three-shot lead and a three-shot victory.
He admitted that he put a lot of pressure on himself about the Ryder Cup, and I'm sure that played a big role in why he had such a tough year. And it's also... I think it's also true that he's been working through swing change, so, that could contribute to Davis Love having a little tough year there.
Right, and of course he's always kind of fought the back injuries and stuff. Last year certainly was an injury-prone year for him as well. Of course he's, 42 or something like that now, so surprising. I mean, 10, 20 years ago, someone being 42 and winning would be kind of unheard of. Now people are wondering why he hasn't won, so.
Yeah.
Again, good for him to get that monkey off his back. And Troy Madison won the Fries.com Open. I frankly didn't even know there was a Fries.com tournament this year. Yet another one of the changes the name every year kind of tournaments. The tour kind of struggling to find some sponsors for certain events here and there. Troy Madison, a graduate of the Nationwide Tour last year, coming in and in his first year, granted at the end of the first year, winning on the PGA Tour to certainly secure a card for the next 2 years. Kudos to him. Did you get a chance to watch much of his victory, Jeff?
Oh yeah, I watched just about the whole last round, second half. Yeah, it was impressive. I was pulling for him. I thought it was great how he held on, and he just seemed, from outside appearances and, through the TV, he seemed pretty calm, pretty happy. He seemed like he was enjoying it. And so it was fun. It was a fun watch.
Yeah, and he's the kind of guy that, coming off the Nationwide Tour, has a pedigree to win. He's be way up on the money list. He was the leading money winner on the Nationwide Tour, I believe, or way up there. So.
Yeah, he was the leading money winner.
Right, so certainly knows how to get it done and prove that at the Fries.com even though it was, maybe not the strongest field, but who cares? It's a PGA Tour field, so.
Yeah, some of you gearheads noticed he was using one of those heavy putters, so that was the first heavy putter win
on
the tour.
And I'm looking at the picture here in the article we'll link to, and I noticed he's using the Titleist 755 irons that we just reviewed on the site. So, pro using a mid-handicapper kind of iron, so there you go.
Yeah, him and who am I thinking of? Bald, slow as molasses. Rory Sabatini left him last year.
Ben Crane?
That's the one.
There you go.
Ben Crane using those irons.
Yeah, a lot of guys are using those, so they're not all muscle backs on tour. That much we know. Retief Goosen, kind of on the Davis Love III bandwagon now, also getting a monkey off his back and winning a tournament in China. Of course, he held off Michael Campbell, so I don't know that was the most convincing of wins. But Retief Goosen not having a great 2006. He's won a few times, I think, internationally, but not on the PGA Tour where it matters.
Yeah, and he's not stringing any U.S. Opens back to back anymore either.
Right, he beat Simon Dunn, Yasin Ali, and Prayad Marksang of Thailand.
So, oh, those are just so recognizable.
They are. So he beat a stellar field of Michael Campbell and a bunch of people whose names we can't pronounce. But again, he won. So kudos to him. Maybe some confidence is all he needs. Lorena Ochoa, not one to need much confidence because she's really getting it done this year. 2003, I think she was on the Futures Tour, 2002 maybe, not that long ago, was the leading money winner on the Futures Tour. And in a very short amount of time has made a big splash on the LPGA Tour, basically now dethroning Annika Sorenstam, certainly at the top of the money list.
Oh, yeah.
Except for not winning a major this year, has certainly been played much, much better all year.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long ago that you and I were talking about how she had aspirations to be number one in the world and yet hadn't obviously proven herself on the LPGA Tour, but as I looked at a couple of weeks ago in my profiles column, and she had an impressive college career and junior amateur career. So this girl knows how to win, and she's really just kind of coming into her own, and I think we can expect some great years out of this girl.
Yeah, and like we said, all the talk about the young American stars, Michelle Wee, maybe you want to put her in there or not, I don't know. Natalie Gulbis, Paula Creamer, Christy Kerr, etc. Haven't heard much from them. Christina Kim, been pretty much absent this year. And I'd get you up to date statistics on the ADT official money list, but the LPGA new website says, the stats are being updated. Please check back at a later time.
If there's any website that bugs me on the LPGA Tour, it is the LPGA Tour's website. What a mess. Try to get any information out of those people.
The stats are being updated. Please check back at a later time, Jeff.
Yeah, like next year. It'll be up to date next January.
Yeah, Han won some tournament they had in like Vietnam or somewhere this weekend. I don't know why the LPGA Tour is playing in Vietnam, but they are. And she won, so whatever. Maybe they're, you know, a day behind because they haven't... It took a long time to send the carrier pigeon with the message from Vietnam or wherever they were to, with the scores and results and earnings. But
they sent it on the slow boat from Vietnam.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Lorena Ochoa is well ahead of Annika Sorenstam and a few other people, obviously, and everyone else, basically, on the money list. So, whatever. The Funai Classic was last week. This past weekend, yesterday, it finished up. Joe Durant is the fifth over 40 winner at Disney. Kind of interesting that a short knocker wins on a tournament course that was about 7,500 yards as well.
Somehow that course does not play that long. When these guys are, having that many birdie opportunities and Justin Rose shoots a 60 on the first day.
It's two courses, but they're both bad resort courses. And, you know, I watched countless balls go in the rough in quotes. Let's, do the air quotes on that. And look, there's the ball. You can see it on TV. It reminds me of that commercial where they're showing the high def picture and all the fans are like, there's the ball. And all the people on the screen are like looking for it in the rough.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it was like that all weekend at the Disney tournament because there's no rough. I've played on Bermuda rough, and when you cut it like that at a resort course, it's like 2 inches long, and the ball just hits on top of it. You're almost better hitting it in the rough because you could kind of go a little fat and not much happens.
Yeah. Well, I watched the back nine there, and obviously Joe Durant's the guy who picked it up again, but Troy Mattison right up at the top, thought he was one shot in the lead before the final round. So
yep, almost winning back-to-back.
Yeah, impressive.
And yeah, Justin Rose, still not getting it done on the PGA Tour. He's won four or five times internationally, but held the lead after the first two rounds, shot a 60. As you said, in the first round, nearly shooting a 59 on a par 72 course. And then his putter cooled off, and he couldn't get it done. So, he led by three or four, I think, after the second round. Led by three or four after the first round. And, like I said, couldn't get it done. So, still a young guy. Looking for him to do something sometime soon, hopefully. He's been around since 98 or so, or 2000 at the British Open. So
he's in his middle 20s now, I suppose, and so. But yeah, he's definitely got the talent to get it done. Be nice if he could close it out.
But not to take anything away from Joe Durant, congratulations. And fortunately, I did manage to stay awake for all or most of his win.
Oh, that's so generous of you, Eric.
Joe Durant. Is it exciting? Can you honestly tell me it was exciting watching Joe Durant win a golf tournament?
It wasn't a real nail biter. No.
No. Okay. Well, we'll be right back after this ad from Titleist and Chip Shots from Golf Gods. So stay with us.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to lounge my feet to the right a little bit, hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip, trust your Titleist.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com.
Baby, it's cold outside. Now that the worm has turned and we are officially in the fall golf season, there are a few accessory items which might make sense to add to your arsenal of equipment. At the top of my list is the Mizuno Breathe Thermo Cold Weather Gloves. There's now no need to play with cold or aching hands. Sold in pairs, these Mizuno gloves provide superior warmth and feature the Mizuno Breathe Thermo fabric inside the glove. The glove works by trapping escaping body heat and generating warmth within the fabric. The gloves are constructed with a pre-curved fit, so the gloves feel both broken in and afford the player maximum feel like a second skin. Flex mesh insert panels at the primary knuckle joints add to the superior comfort and fit. The best part about stocking up on accessories is that many pro shops, including Golf Gods, are offering significant savings to move out excess inventory. That means, at least in this case, for $20 you can get a product which might give you a slight edge over your playing partners. Well, that's it for Chip Shots this week. Now back to the podcast.
Welcome back. A couple of weeks ago, Jack Nicklaus was in the news again. He apparently was having a twinge of conscience when he was remembering a possible infraction that he committed. He was in a bunker, hit the ball, and he was afraid that he hit the ball in his backswing, or I don't know what. It was a double hit.
He was afraid it hit off the face of the bunker and then went over his back or something.
Right, and then he hit it on the way back.
Or may have caught his sweater or something.
Right, well, anyway, an official said, no, I saw it. It was just a piece of debris. He didn't hit the ball. But Nicklaus brings this up. So anyway, we've got this topic posted in the forum, and some, you know, people are weighing in on both sides of the topic. For me,
I don't know that people are weighing in on both sides. It seems pretty one-sided, in that common reaction among people is, Jack Nicklaus is remembering something from 30-plus years ago. In fact, one guy said, Nicklaus only brought up the incident so people would go, look at all the integrity that man has to be bothered by something so long ago where he clearly did nothing wrong as an official was right there. So why did this guy bring it up now? Well, we talk about Jack Nicklaus frequently enough on this podcast, and almost every week it seems to be the same thing. Look at me, I'm still relevant. I was good. Remember me? I was pretty good back in my day. This Tiger Woods guy, I'm still better than him. Yeah, remember me? Hi. Oh, I have a lot of integrity, too. I'm worried about a shot I hit 32 years ago. Yeah.
Well, but on the other hand, though, if I can play devil's advocate, I mean, obviously, Jack is involved with
the priest
golf.
And he's playing devil's advocate.
Okay, well, anyway.
There's no winning. There's no winning. Jack Nicklaus is a...
Well, but here's the thing. He's always going to be involved with golf. His record shows that he's the best. He's accomplished the most.
He is. That's why these things make him look so stupid.
But here's the thing. People are going to constantly ask him questions. He's going to be reminiscing. And some writer is going to pick this up. It happened to be Michael Bamberger from SI.com, and he's going to write just some story, you know, and it might not even be Jack's deal. He might have just been chatting with Michael, and all of a sudden Michael says, oh, there's a story in here, and so he puts it on the website, and here we are talking.
I don't know. I'm fairly certain that Nicklaus has enough cachet and power that writers run their stuff by him before it gets posted. I'm pretty sure you don't misquote Jack Nicklaus. Unless you don't want to be quoting Jack Nicklaus anymore, ever. You know, I'm pretty sure Nicklaus had to have some idea that this was going up. Maybe not in the final form, but I'm sure he had to have some idea that this was going up. And anytime this continues to happen, it just makes Jack look stupid.
Oh, I don't know. Which one of us would do that? I mean, we're going to go give our interviews, and we're not going to say anything about it. We're just going to say, hey, this is what happened. And with no thought of, oh, you know, don't paint me in a good light, because then people think I'm just a choir boy, and they're going to start giving me a hard time.
This isn't painting him in a good light. This is an entire article written about something that clearly doesn't matter. And the reason for it seems to be only to get Jack Nicklaus's name out there as a good guy, yet again. Great.
It's okay. Possible. It's possible.
It's an entire article about this one thing. It had to be run by Jack at some point, because Jack, like Tiger nowadays, most guys don't write stuff about them that they don't know about. If they want to keep writing stuff about him.
Uh-huh.
Jack, Tiger, a few other guys, you don't piss them off if you want to keep writing about them. Peter Costas learned this lesson, for example.
Yeah.
So, that's what I'm saying. Don't know if it's true, but that's how it seems to be. Who knows? Again, we'll be the jury's still out.
I'm just going to remain quiet.
Jeff is on the side of the devil now. We'll be right back after this
message.
Could
it be Satan?
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of drift.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. This week, this is an old story, but again, we took 2 weeks off, so Tiger Woods did not play the Funai Classic, of course, missing his chance at winning the Varden Trophy for low scoring average.
Eric, I have to say, this is a terrible smear on his career, and we're going to look back and shed tears that
right.
he didn't win.
Right.
This Vardon Trophy.
I mean, two majors in a year is nothing compared to winning the Vardon Trophy.
Yeah, well, we're going to all look back and think, Jim Furyk, he is the man.
That's right.
Who's Tiger Woods?
I don't know. I mean, he only won eight times in, like, four starts.
In 4 weeks.
And six in a row, although, you know, some people don't like that. So, yeah. But he'll be playing the Tour Championship, most likely. I doubt he's going to pull a Phil and skip it. Although he's not had good success at the Tour Championship, specifically the Tour Championship at Eastlake. So it really kind of puts in danger his, you know, six in a row going for seven in a row streak. Although at the same time, some people could probably, and I wouldn't be one of these people, some people could probably say, well, it's really six full field PGA Tour events in a row. You know what I mean? If he doesn't right. win. Some people are going to do that. I'm not going to, because believe me, the guy...
Whatever. Tiger's not going to do it. I mean, he's already said, no, my streak's over. He had a terrible... Well, he didn't have a terrible Ryder Cup, but I mean, he didn't obviously win, you know, a couple events in a row there.
But
so,
his stroke play thing is still intact, and his tournaments on the PGA Tour thing is still intact. So even he can't argue with those, so whatever. Maybe not a wise move to play at the Tour Championship, although certainly one I respect. You know, I wouldn't respect him if he pulled out because he was afraid he wouldn't win. That doesn't strike me as Tiger-like. That strikes me as Phil-like. Not Tiger-like, though. Right. I don't want to enter because I might not win. That just is not Tiger. He's 180 degrees the opposite direction. So,
of course, Phil has never said that.
No, Phil wants to spend time with his family.
And that's what I like about Eric, is he just gives people the benefit of the doubt like that.
Right. Phil wants to spend time with his family, so he routinely skips the trip to Disney, and then he also routinely skips trips to Hawaii. Don't know.
Well, that's, I mean, great. Maybe he doesn't like hot weather and Disneyland with his kids, or...
Maybe he prefers Disneyland instead of Disney World.
La La Land?
Like I said, I think he's on the beer and ice cream diet. The European Tour in 2007 is going to play like 112 events in 30 weeks or something. No, they're playing a record 50 official money events, up from 34 a decade
ago.
They're playing 50 events. And if it's like last year, they're actually going to start their 2007 season in like a month, because they started in December last year. 50 events.
Maybe they think they're going to kind of, you know, swab up all the extra things that the PGA Tour's sloughing off, and they're going to get the viewership and the sponsor money and... 50 events, man!
And they start in November. Their 2007 season starts in November. So,
my goodness.
So they're only going to play 40 events, because 10 of them are actually this year. But 50 events, I mean, do they realize the calendar year is only 52 weeks long?
Well, we got 2 weeks off, you know. It's a break.
Yeah, pretty much the opposite of, you know, the way the PGA Tour is going with the FedEx Cup and ending in, you know, May or whatever the season ends next year.
But, yeah. Maybe they're like, we're not going to be like the Americans. We're going to expand our season.
All right,
those wusses.
50 events. Yeah. Their first event is November 9th through the 12th of this year. Their last event is November 1st through the 4th of next year.
Oh.
So between those two dates, if you wrapped it around, it would be 5 days off.
Not good.
And I know they get to 50 because they have a couple double events, like the majors, and then they have the opposite field events. So that counts as two events for that week, but...
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're traveling to Indonesia and Kuwait and God knows where else. So, the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all over. They're not even in Europe half the time. So,
yeah.
50 events is a lot.
Too much.
The FedEx Cup, not 50 events. But anyway, moving from the European Tour to the Old Man Tour, the Champions Tour, the Senior Circuit, one thing they announced their new fall schedule, or their new schedule for 2007 as well. Of course, one of the things in this article that I wanted to talk about, though, was the Champions Tour qualifying school. Players will no longer play for a Champions Tour card. Instead, they're vying for a chance to qualify for events. The top 30 finishers from Q School will earn a seat at the Monday qualifying table each week to play for 9 spots in that week's tournament. Of course, those aren't the only 30 guys vying for those 9 spots. So, you know, there's like 60 of them regularly, because, you know, you can qualify for the qualifier as well. What the hell is up with this? I mean, this is about PGA Tour players making themselves a nice little retirement plan where they can have a little barbecue every week and be guaranteed a spot in the field and not compete against guys that are 45 right now that are going to retire, play hard for 5 years, and try to make the Champions Tour. This is retarded. This pisses me off. I mean, it's the dream of people like you and me, or I'm not saying it's not the dream of you and me necessarily, but the dream of people like you and me, man, that if we have some success in life and we retire at 45, hey, maybe we can try out for the Champions Tour, you know?
Right.
Put 5 years in, get good and play with, you know, the people that are winning on the PGA Tour right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gone is that dream. It's going to be the guys that are on the PGA Tour now are going to have their nice little retirement plan, and we'll be stuck watching them on TV. Q School will get you a chance to qualify? What the hell is that?
It seems to me like this is a classic example of a decision that is meant to keep certain people, like you just said, out of the maybe they weren't happy with the kind of people that qualified the top 30 in the past at qualifying school, and they're saying, hey, now we don't want those people stuck on the tour all year long, so we're going to make them qualify every week.
Cut the number to 10 or something. I mean, this is just, again, this just smacks of old boy fogyism or something, you know what I mean? Keeping people out of the club that were never in the club. And you know, if you were in the club, I don't care if you were, you know, Tom Pernice Jr. and you never won anything and you don't know when your putter hits a ball or what. But, you know, hey, you're one of the guys, so you can come play in the Champions Tour. Everyone else, forget it. Go stay at home and watch us on TV. That's just, it's ignorant, it's rude, it's not what the Champions Tour necessarily was about. Actually, it's not what the Senior Tour is about. With the name Champions Tour, a lot of the guys on the Champions Tour have never won anything in their life anyway.
Are they saying they don't like guys like Dana Quigley? Is that the message?
Apparently. I'm surprised he hasn't spoken out on this. I mean, the guy, I forget his name exactly, Bob Johnson or something like that, but, you know, he drove a Budweiser beer truck or something. You know, he was a big story on the Champions Tour. You know, I'm not sure Alan Doyle played much on the PGA Tour. You know, and this is a guy that's the senior U.S. Open champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of guys that came onto the Champions Tour with good stories and good whatever that didn't play on the PGA Tour. I mean, some of them were club pros for a number of years. Some of them, you know, I think Dana Quigley did that for a number of years. And, you know, he was the champion of the season last year. At, you know, age 56, he played 700-some tournaments in a row or something on the Champions Tour, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Gone are those stories. It's not going to happen. It's going to be literally impossible for someone to do that now because they're not going to qualify every week. It pisses me off. Jackasses.
Well, hopefully there's a backlash here, and this is, you know, obviously this article kind of flew in under the radar. It hasn't been talked about because, of course, the Champions Tour doesn't get as much press as a PGA, LPGA tours. But, you know, hopefully there's a backlash here, you know, from people like yourself and, you know, people like Dana Quigley and others who haven't played the PGA Tour, and they say, hey, come on, let's get with the program here and make this opportunity available to people who can play the game, because that's what it's about.
I'm going to write a letter to Dana Quigley. We'll see what happens.
You should. That'd be great.
Probably nothing. I'll send him some cigars and butter him up.
He doesn't like Cubans.
Okay, got it. He likes likes hybrids, doesn't like Cubans. Got it.
That's it.
Michelle Wee, her first year is over. She played the Samsung, the tournament where Michael Bamberger, of all people, disqualified her, basically, a day later. But her year is up. How would you summarize it?
Her year?
Her first year as a professional.
Mired in a little controversy. And I think a lot of people, a lot of golf fans, pretty frustrated with how it all came out. Obviously, as you pointed out, she played as much as she could on the LPGA Tour. Couldn't play anymore, so she didn't have those opportunities. But she played these sponsors exemptions, and we just didn't see her play very well. After kind of starting the season fairly well, coming close to making a cut in one or two events, and then she just kind of fell off. I think the competition was just too much for her, and it was a bit of a frustration for me. I hope she comes out and plays better golf.
Right. I think that, like I said in previous podcasts, playing on the PGA Tour may have actually been, she said it's been helpful because, and this makes sense to me, playing on the PGA Tour, playing longer courses with tougher setups makes going to the LPGA Tour seem a lot easier. And then later in the year, I started to hear some people say, you know, I think her swing is different, trying to keep up with the guys, and that's been detrimental. And I started to kind of see that. She was not as balanced anymore, and so on. So I started to see that as reality as well. So, you know, I think Michelle Wee needs to, because she's probably going to take a couple more of these. She's always going to play in the Sony Open. She needs to go out there and just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not try to hit it 300 yards, because she doesn't really. And just go out and have fun. Enjoy the experience. Try to play different shots. You know, try to play as best as she can. And then take what she can learn from that and play good women's golf.
Mm-hmm.
Because her life will get a whole lot easier when she wins something.
And I think that the mental tax that it's taken in her life is tough. And I think that accumulative effect over the next couple of years could really be hard on her. Now, this is a talented young woman. She's going to play a lot of good golf in the future. But this could really be something tough on her, you know, as she looks back on it. Man, that was a hard time. And she's kind of losing the second half of her teen years to trying to smash the ball on the PGA Tour. I just hope that she's out there for the right reasons and she's not doing it because
for daddy,
her dad says it's what she's supposed to do, which would be awful.
And we talked before about, you know, the fact that in 5 years she may be out of golf if she really is not enjoying this truly. If she's being pushed into this, you never know what she may be doing in 5 years. She could be hosting something on MTV or something for all we know. Arnold Palmer is done with tournament golf. I mean, this is a current story, in fact. I thought it was, you know, someone had posted something from 10, 20, 30 years ago. But no, Arnold Palmer is done with tournament golf. He was playing in the Administaff Open. Of course, Administaff, one of his sponsors, and decided he was done. And he means it this time, and he's done with tournament golf, period. So, you know, sad to see him go, but at the same time, I mean, most people kind of thought this happened 15 years ago, so not a big...
He was content to play on the Champions Tour and get as much competitive golf in as he could, but the story that we'll link to says that I believe he hit a couple of balls in the water, and he just couldn't, was not getting the ball around, and so he says, you know, this is just too much to do, and, you know, it was kind of a moving interview afterwards. You can see the tears in his eyes, and, you know, I like Arnie. I mean, he's a unique guy, a classy individual. And so, yeah, it's 77 years old. It's probably time for him to hang it up, but it's a tough thing for a guy like Palmer to do.
Yep, and I love Arnie too, but like I said, I think most people thought this happened 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
So probably coming as a surprise that he's retired because they thought he was retired already. You know, sad to see him go, and certainly thanks for the memories, you know, kind of before my time, but he's from Latrobe, and I'm up 2 hours north in Erie, so certainly kind of, you know, I've heard stories and talked to people that knew him back when and all that, so a good guy, and we wish him, you know, a long and happy rest of his life. That'll do it for episode 40 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Again, you may want to post our forum topic for next week, and you can do so at thesandtrap.com/forum. If you post something intelligent or something that bashes Jack Nicklaus, we'll probably pick it. But maybe not. That, yeah, like I said, yeah, that does it for episode 40. For Jeff Smith, this is Eric Barzeski saying bye-bye.
Yeah, see you next time.